Hi, Patrick Cox here with some language stories that you may or may not have come across this past month. We have African languages coming to an operating system near you. We have Moldova changing the name of its official language, sort of. We have linguistic diversity in South Korea. We have a cutout and keep guide to avoiding embarrassment in choosing a name for your baby. And finally, we have invented languages gone wild. How can you resist? The world's cartoon queen, Carol Hills, is in the studio here. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Patrick.
How are you?
I'm good.
Excellent. Well, we got five stories, and you have the first one.
I sure do. It's about Windows 7, Microsoft's latest iteration of their operating system. It was released a couple months ago, and they've announced they're going to release it in 10 African languages, which is kind of exciting. They're saying this sort of out of part altruism, part marketing. They think that it will help expand computer use in Africa, help legitimize languages that aren't currently represented in computers. In Africa, the whole online universe is still very much English and French. And so they think this could also help language survival of certain languages and also give many Africans a chance to express themselves online in their own language. I mean, currently, the computers, they don't even have the accents or anything needed to write in these languages. So it's kind of cool. I mean, they're languages that the formal names of them may reflect more common names that we know, but the 10 languages are not pronouncing them correctly. That's the big warning here. Sesotho Sa-Leboa, Setswana, Isi-Hosa, Isi-Zulu, Afrikaans, Hausa, I think Igbo is actually Igbo, Yoruba, Kiswahili, and Amharic. And broadly, they're languages that are sort of straddle South Africa, Botswana area, Southern Africa.
But in Nigeria there too.
Nigeria, we've got the Hausa and Igbo and Yoruba. Then we've got the East African, Kiswahili, and Amharic. So I think they really represent a lot of people. So it is kind of interesting because I think at least me for a long time thought that the whole online world was going to basically remain English and, you know,
French. Right. Yeah, that legitimacy to those languages is interesting. I mean, it seems as though there's a whole new literacy drive now, which is computer literacy in terms of languages. I mean, if a language, if a indigenous native language is not represented or you can't express yourself through these software programs, it's almost as though it is illegitimate. And if you can't speak English or Arabic or Swahili or one of these languages that's already up there in computer software, you're computer illiterate.
Very much so. And that's kind of what the officials at Microsoft are saying. The other big thing out there, though, of course, is piracy, software piracy.
Right, right.
And they just are basically honest about this. They don't have any clue whether this will help fight that or not. Because that's just so pervasive.
Right. I imagine that it will both help and hinder efforts. I mean, there's going to be, if there's more computer activity and more people just doing stuff online as a result of having access through their own languages, there are more opportunities for piracy.
Yes.
But on the other hand, pirate programs that are already out there in those languages may be replaced by the official versions, as it were.
Right. So it's kind of interesting. I mean, the two of these 10 will come online in 2010, Amharic and Kiswahili, and then the rest of them in 2011. But it's just inherently very interesting because I've just assumed that a lot of these major companies had written off certain parts of the world in terms of linguistically. And I don't know whether, you know, I have no idea, but I don't know whether somebody like Bill Gates, who now is so entrenched internationally in terms of the
Especially
Gates Foundation,
Africa.
Whether that has influenced the corporation's priorities. Who knows? But it's sort of an interesting question.
Yeah. Well, nice one. Okay. Well, on to number four, different part of the world, Moldova, which is a place close to my heart. I spent a few months there.
Yes, I remember.
It has had a problem with its national language, with its official language. It hadn't really been able to decide what it's called. It is enshrined in the constitution as Moldovan. Moldova is a former Soviet republic that won its independence after the breakup of the Soviet Union in the early 90s. And at the time, you know, Moldovan nationalism was very much defined in terms of your Romanian identity. Most Moldovans are ethnic Romanians, and the language they speak is pretty darn close to Romanian. Indeed, Romanian was initially declared in the Declaration of Independence as the national language. And that got pared down in the 90s because of sensitivities over Moscow. There was great fear that the Russians, who had occupied a part of Moldova, would occupy the whole of Moldova. And the Russians, during Soviet times, had declared the language of Moldova to be called Moldovan, despite the fact that it was exactly the same, or almost virtually the same as Romanian. They had this kind of weird declaration of it being called Moldovan. The only real difference between Moldovan and Romanian during Soviet times was the script. The Russians or the Kremlin insisted on Cyrillic script, but it was, you know, spoken. It was the same language as Romanian. And since independence, yeah, the leaders have been generally friendly toward Moscow because it doesn't really pay to be unfriendly. And as a result, they've stuck with this Moldovan being the national language. Well, now there's a new government. There's an acting president. As we speak, he's still the acting president because there's the usual political stasis and crisis in Moldova, which means that he can't actually become president. But he has declared himself to be a speaker of the Romanian language. He and his government have changed the official Moldovan government website language designation from Moldovan to Romanian. Now, that doesn't mean anything legally, but it's the first in possibly a step to declaring themselves Romanian.
So who could possibly object to this in Moldova?
Well, I think a lot of Russian speakers, Ukrainian speakers, a lot of people who are nervous about Moldovan aspirations to eventually becoming a part of a greater Romania. This is the great Russian fear.
Any basis for that fear?
Well, I think that the fear is that they look at Romania. Romania has recently joined the European Union. And, you know, Moldovans kind of look over the other side of whatever that river is between Romania and Moldova and think, hey, I could have a piece of that. So, you know, maybe there is a little bit there. There's certainly pro-Bucharest nationalism is a big deal in Moldova. And here's a classic example of language playing this incredibly important role. Nothing to do with the substance of the language. Nothing has changed in the substance of the language. It's all just simply what you call the language. And that has great, great meaning across the capitals of Eastern Europe.
Yeah, that's like the whole Serbo-Croatian thing.
After
the whole breakup of Yugoslavia, you know, Serbo-Croatian became Serbian if it was spoken in Serbia and Croatian if it was spoken in Croatia.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then there was a Bosnian, but they're all the same language.
They're essentially. I mean, they just, you know, the Croats had certain things that they liked to say that were different from Serbs, but, you know, mainly that was just anti-Serb slurs. Okay, so what you got for story number three, Carol?
Story number three is pretty interesting. I was shocked to learn this. South Korea, there's a dearth of women, available women to marry, particularly in rural areas of South Korea. And so many men marry women from Thailand, the Philippines, Vietnam, and China. And so in particular hospitals where these couples then have children, the nurses and the people to help deliver the babies, they have now learned to say push, push in four different languages besides Korean.
Wow. And a few other crucial birthing terms as
exactly,
well.
Exactly. Yeah. So they say push in Korean, Tagalog, the Filipino language, Chinese, Vietnamese, and Thai.
Goodness.
The story just sort of starts in the delivery room. The larger story, of course, is having a mixed family in a place like South Korea, which is pretty homogeneous. Mm. These regions of South Korea are trying to create services for these women to help them learn Korean and for their children, who are often picked on and ostracized. And even in the limited research they've done since this trend has developed, more kids who have non-Korean mothers are bullied and are doing worse in school and all this kind of stuff. Mm. They even have a term for them. I don't know how you pronounce it, but it's Kosians, or K-O-S-I-A-N-S, instead of Asians, Kosians.
Korean Asians.
Korean Asians, yes. Korean Asians,
oh, interesting.
Kosians.
So that's kind of like their version of Amerasian.
Right. Mm. So it's kind of interesting. I just had no idea. I didn't think of there being a dearth of available women in South Korea in the same way that you think of that in China with a one-child policy and that kind of thing. So they're contending with it. They say They between the lines, and when you read about this, they say they're basically saying, well, they're not as xenophobic as the Japanese, but they're close, you know. So they're
Because on the face of it, it's not. I mean, the challenge of integrating these folks is not as great as in the United States, integrating entire families who don't speak English. I mean, you're talking about, for the most part, a Korean speaking one parent, the father, and so already there's a kind of built-in teacher within the family. But if the nation itself doesn't define itself as an immigrant nation and therefore has that much more xenophobia, then, yeah, I guess it is a real problem.
And I think it's also because I think the women in the family, the mothers, serve the function as the ambassador to the public and are, you know, doing the primary child rearing. So they're, you know, they're the social piece of the couple.
Right.
And if they don't speak the language,
yeah,
then the thinking is, right, well, they can't, you know, be as prominent and get their kid to do all the things they're supposed to do,
yeah,
or whatever. So I think it has to do, yeah, also with sex roles.
And maybe Korean dads are just the strong, silent types.
Sit in front of the TV with a beer types. Who knows?
Okay, all right. Well, story number two is sticking with the subject of babies, although it takes a somewhat different turn. And that is, there is a translation company out there. In fact, it's a translation company that we featured before, I found out. From, I don't know, last time we did one of these things, this was about a company who offered their services to translate Glaswegian.
Oh, yes, Glaswegian, it's a London-based translation
service.
Yeah,
now this is the same translation service that clearly has got an eye on getting stories in the news
world
media. And of course, you know, suckers that we are, here we are, giving them publicity. In any case, the latest service is to offer for £1,000, which is nearly $1,700, which seems an awful lot of money. They will check out a name. If you want to have a baby and you want to give them a certain name, you want to just make sure that that name doesn't mean something just terrible in a foreign language. They will check it out for you. And I don't know how many languages they'll check it out. They're not crystal clear about that. But they'll check it out in a lot of major languages. Just make sure that it doesn't mean anything terrible. And they came up with a few names out there. They tend to be celebrity kids' names because celebrities like to name their kids kind of
Apple,
slightly strange names. And so, now, let me see. What do they have? Oh, yeah. One of the most famous ones. Again, we have a pronunciation challenge here, but Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes's kid called Suri. Is that how you pronounce it?
I don't know. I thought it was Sura, but maybe it's Suri.
Carol, don't you have Tom's number? Can we just... Sura's name in Japanese means pickpocket.
She's not going to have to do any of that.
It also means horse mackerels in Italian.
What is a horse mackerel?
Also, I looked that up. I had no idea what a horse mackerel is. It means a large fish.
Oh.
Yeah. It's a, quote, popular name for a large fish such as a tuna or scat. So, Tom, Katie, think about that next time you're in Italy. There are some other ones. There's a famous English soccer star who has just fathered a child. The child's name is Kai. The father's name is Wayne Rooney. Kai means probably in Finnish. It means peer in Estonian. And in Yoruba, stop it. So there you go. I also then look. I started getting interested in this and see how far you can. I remember that Andre Agassi and Steffi Graf named their offspring Jazz, J-A-Z.
J-A-Z.
J-A-Z. Hmm. Now, this isn't something that the translation company had a chance to check out, I don't think, because in Serbian and in Croatian, of course, it means chasm, which is a kind of weird thing to call a kid.
Yeah.
In Galician, according to Google Translate, and I need to hang this on them, it means lies. I don't think it means untruths. I think it's the other type of lies.
Oh,
but in Polish, jazz means a low dam built across a stream to raise its level or divert its flow. Or, in other words, weir. So that's my number two. Oh yes. Sorry, there was a kind of little stop press story off of the back of this that came out as I speak today in one of the British newspapers. And that is that there's a fellow called Chris Hunt, who is a plumber, and he most certainly doesn't care, I would say, about this translation service, because he has renamed himself Mr. Monster Munch. after his favorite food item, which is a brand of corn chips in Britain called Monster Munch. He eats 3 bags a day, and Flamin' Hot Flavor, I think, is his favorite. Oh, and roast beef. So there you go. Mr. Monster Munch is his new name, and it's for real. He's managed to change his name legally.
It's always interesting when people change their names. It's a rather dramatic thing when you think about it. I mean, you must really hate your name or be extremely fond of this alternative.
Yeah, I mean, people in the past, you think of sort of, there are perfectly legitimate reasons for changing your name, like you're naturalizing in a new country. Mm-hmm. And I mean, in the old days, you were given a new name, an Americanized name, if you were coming here. Or you chose to drop your old world name for fear of prejudice or whatever. But yeah, just simply calling yourself Mr. Monster Munch? I don't know.
I must say, I do know several people who are named Rainbow, hippie kids who changed their name.
It's tough. Moon Unit Zapper. I think she dropped the unit.
Moon?
I think she's just Moon Zapper, which is not perfect, but it's a lot better than Moon Unit. Okay, well, story number one, Carol.
Story number one is one of those sort of epitome of a language story to have fun with. It's about Klingon. Need I say more? And there's several things about Klingon this week. And one of them is, I don't know why we're learning about this now, because it was originally happened in 1999. But anyway, it's this guy in Minnesota, he's a linguist. And for the first 3 years of his son's life, he only spoke Klingon to him.
Mm.
And this guy, the linguist, he says that his son responded and his wife only spoke English to the son, and the son would respond in Klingon to the father and respond in English to the mother.
Which is the classic way to raise a child bilingually.
Yeah. Exactly. And so he said, you know, the kid never confused the words or anything like that. He used to play him a lullaby called May the Empire Endure. It's a Klingon lullaby. I tried finding it. I couldn't find it. What's not surprising is that eventually the kid stopped responding to the dad when he was getting older, and he just said, I had enough. And the father says, it was clear he wasn't enjoying this anymore. And so they just had to end the experiment. And, you know, his kid's now in high school and he's just, you know, not interested in Klingon. But he thought this was a very interesting thing he had done. And, of course, the Klingon Language Institute does, too. And that Language Institute's website says it's the fastest growing language in the galaxy.
The thing I like about Klingon is that they do have a sense of humor about it. I mean, that's a great line.
Yeah.
And that seems to be part of what attracts people to Klingon. A lot of these invented languages, and I don't know if pod listeners will remember or if you heard that we did a big thing in The World in Words, number 62, on invented languages, including a segment on Klingon. Well worth a listen. But a lot of those invented languages, as we discussed then, they're deeply humorless to start off with. They're real attempts, earnest attempts by often somewhat oddball type characters, mm-hmm, to create a way in which we can communicate directly. You know, language doesn't work that way. We humans don't work that way. There are reasons why language presents all of the challenges and obfuscations. Is that the right word? All of these barriers to communicating, you know, it's part of who we are. Now, and Klingon seems to have taken this on board and also sort of run with the humor a little bit. I mean, they enjoy poking fun at themselves. And the other interesting thing about Klingon is, like Esperanto and like a minority of these invented languages, it does seem to have its roots in some kind of linguistic intellectual rigor. It was created by linguists who sort of understood a little bit more about language than most people do.
And they even have insults.
They're Klingons. I'm more surprised that they have lullabies. Although a Klingon lullaby might be a punk rock song or something, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we're going to find out with a new language that's been invented. Of course, it coincides with a huge event, a new James Cameron movie. $400 million extravaganza.
Ooh.
Avatar. It's a science fiction film. There's these blue people who are 10 feet tall with tails.
People.
Well, they're whatever. I don't know what you call them.
Basketball
players. Well, they come from Pandora. Their planet is Pandora or something. So anyway, James Cameron kind of doodled around himself and experimented with some sounds. Apparently, he spent time around Maoris and New Zealand, and he's spent a lot of time there. And he was kind of messing around. And then he actually sought out a linguist.
Hmm.
He sent a query to the University of Southern California, and the people in linguistics department said, oh, we know just the right person.
Mm-hmm.
They gave it to this guy. I think his name is Paul Frommer. And anyway, he took to this with zeal, and he created a language for this film. And it's called Navi, and I haven't read anywhere why it's called Navi, whether that's just a name they use in the film or whatever.
It's N-A-apostrophe-V-I,
yes,
which immediately gives it some kind of legitimacy.
Yes.
You know, as soon as you see that apostrophe, you just think, whoa, that is so foreign and so unpronounceable. That's, you know, it's complicated.
But ethnic and pure at the same time. So anyway, he's constructed this language. There's about 1,000 words right now. It has grammar, has orthology, whatever that means, syntax, a sound system. You can put the words in any order. It's interesting. And he's freed it from any formal construction. But he had to take into account that actors needed to be able to speak this.
Mm.
And he thinks the thing it's closest to is some sort of South Pacific kind of, you know, Maori-like thing, but it's its own thing. It doesn't have any voice stop sounds, as they call them, like B or D or a hard G. He uses a lot of glottal stuff, where you're not sort of using the air, you're sort of going, yeah, yeah, you know. Sort
oh,
of.
Right, semi-clicky, but not quite.
Semi-clicky, but not quite clicky, yeah. And interesting, this linguist himself has a lot of experience with languages, partly through travel and living in different places. But all told, I mean, he's familiar with Malay, Hebrew, French, Latin, some German, and Persian.
Wow.
And so he just got totally excited about this. And he is, you know, he adores Klingon. And so Klingon was kind of a model, a linguist created Klingon. And he hopes that Navi will generate as much interest as Klingon. That's his hope. And he even in the film, they even made it so the native Navi speakers sound slightly different than the non-native. You know, Sigourney Weaver, I think she's the one who comes and visits the Navi or whatever. So they've made those distinctions in how they pronounce the words.
Mm.
I sort of, you know, harumph about it because it just seems sort of over the top, ridiculous kind of James Cameron-y way. But he does make good films. And I was desperate to try to find a trailer that had some Navi in it, but I can't find any of them.
They probably don't want people to think this is a foreign language movie, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. So I don't think I think that's exactly right. So they're just staying. They just keep the sort of pretty blue people with the tails and a lot of, you know, CG hijinks and stuff. And,
right, right.
But, they're blue people with tails and flat noses. What the hell's going on?
Well, let's hear it for Navi, the latest new language. Carol, thank you very much.
Hey, Patrick, anytime.
And what's next up on theworld.org/cartoons?
Oh, lots of great cartoons this week. Big things, a lot of very funny ones on Obama's big Afghan speech, and Tiger Woods is featured big time.
I bet he
this
is.
Week. Let's just leave it there.
Mm. Okay, that's it for another Newsy Pod. There's more info, links, pics, and all of that at theworld.org/language. Also at patrickcox.wordpress.com. I'm also on Twitter and Facebook, on Facebook at the World in Words group page. I'll be back in a few days. Till then, as they say in Klingon, it's not goodbye, it's not even close. It's your mother has a smooth forehead, with thanks to the Klingon Language Institute.